So it can be tempting to think that war is inevitable, that human beings are just too violent or too aggressive, or we just basically suck too much to maintain any kind of lasting peace. So here's an argument on the other side. Back in 2003, there was a civil war going on in Liberia. Remember, it was a war that had gone on seemingly forever. There were unspeakable atrocities on both sides. And then a woman named Lima Bowie basically stood up and said, enough. She gathered the women of Liberia together in a nonviolent protest, and it ended the civil war. Not only did her efforts lead to the ouster and the imprisonment of the dictator Charles Taylor, she also won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011. Bowie told Steve Paulson that war-torn Liberia had gotten so bad that she just felt like she had to take matters into her own hands.
Liberia had gone from bad to worse to ridiculous. That is how bad it was. People were inventing new ways of killing people. Pregnant women were being degutted. People were using plastic bags to drop in people's eyes and melting hot objects over people's bodies. So it was a terrible time. Especially women, rape was a common phenomenon at that point in time. There was no regard for women or their place in society or their lives. It was just easy to humiliate, rape, and to oppress them.
So it was truly awful. I mean, it frankly looked hopeless. So why did you think you could do something about this?
Well, there is something about being pushed to the wall and being pushed so far back that you have two options to either give in or fight back. And we were at that place as women of Liberia where we had been pushed so far back. And the one thing that I can say was that we knew we would die. But the question was, do you want to die without even trying, or do you want to die and let the history be that you die trying? And we didn't think that we would bring peace, but we knew that we would try. We knew that we would give the world another side of the conflict, because all of the reporting had a different notion of boys with guns, men with money, drugs and diamonds and all of the different things. So when we stepped out, it was about changing the narrative about war.
There were so many things that you were up against. And I mean, one of them was that Charles Taylor had prohibited any public gatherings of protesters. But you and these other Christian and Muslim women in your movement gathered every day, and there were thousands of you demanding peace, demanding an audience with Taylor, which I guess raises the question, why didn't he arrest you, or why didn't he have you killed?
Well, that is the question that many people still ask still today, but I say one thing. What I've come to learn is that when you have brutal dictators and violent people, they have no response for nonviolence. So it totally took him off guard. It would have been easy for us to come out and throw rocks, and then he would have a reason for killing us. But how do you kill a group of people who sit there with a banner that says, we want peace now?
So incredibly dangerous, obviously. I mean, you said earlier that you assumed you would die during this protest. How scared were you?
There wasn't a lot of fear. In the initial stage when we started, yes, there were moments where I got afraid. But every day as we stepped out to protest, and every day as I got to know the women we were protesting with and know their stories, every day that confidence grew, the courage grew, and a lot of things. But there was very little fear by the time we entered the second week of protesting, let alone by the second year.
When did you think that you might actually have a chance to bring down Charles Taylor, to remove him from power?
When he agreed to meet us, because he had resisted and said no. When he agreed to meet us, something profound happened that day. We got to the executive mansion, and the soldiers said they had been instructed that if we were less than 25, we should not be allowed into his mansion. And then I asked, what if we're more than 25? And then they laughed, because at that time, there was so much fear around this figure, Taylor, that no one expected that more than 25 women would show up to protest him. And I said, what if we're more than 25? And they said, then you can come in. At that moment, we sent message up to where the women had lined up over 2,500 of us and say, calm down. And the soldiers saw that sea of white and they were like, wow, these women are really serious.
It's just, it's an astonishing story. And partly what you're saying is that he and pretty much everyone else in Liberia was just assuming that you would be terrified to go in and meet with him. And that's sort of like, I mean, you somehow you managed to turn that around. I mean, you seem to get through that terror.
That day when we went to see Taylor, for me standing up to speak to him was, I just told myself, because they had given me a statement to read. And by the time I got up there, I said, I'm not going to read this statement because it's too sterile. It's just too neat for this man. I have to speak the truth about the situation of all of us women. We were refugees, we're internally displaced, we're victims of rape. We're living off of the streets. People and their children were dying on a daily basis. Our daughters and sons were being conscripted as small boys into his army, into the armies of the rebels. So I had to tell him this is the reality of the Liberian people. This is the reality specifically of women of this country. And there was no fear in that telling. All that was there was a huge sense of anger that this one man has put us in all of this mess. That was what I was thinking on that day.
Well, eventually, you brokered a peace deal. I mean, amazingly, a peace deal between Charles Taylor and the rebel warlords. You forced Taylor out of power, and he was later arrested for war crimes. Your movement led to the election of the first woman president in Africa. Truly a remarkable story. And it's remarkable partly because it's so rare. I mean, almost always it's the generals, not the peace activists, who win. And I guess it raises the question of whether peace really can defeat war in any systematic way.
Well, I think where we need to come in this world, especially now, is to understand that good can always overcome evil and peace can definitely defeat war. You know, war is, if you go back to the Liberian story, it was just a matter of time that peace was going to take over, peace was going to win, you know.
Why would that be just a matter of time? It would seem that it could just drag on forever.
Well, it would seem that it would drag on forever, but I tell you one thing, that even those with the guns, they always pick up the guns not in the name of war. And you need to remember that. When people go to war, they're always saying we're fighting in the name of peace, which is ironical, because there's no way fire can put out fire. So if you're going to war because you want peace, if someone offers you the perfect alternative to what you're killing yourselves for, you're bound to reach out and grab it.
But there are an awful lot of leaders, of historians, of philosophers who say war is inevitable, that we've always had war from the beginning of history. It seems to be a part of human nature. Are you saying war is not inevitable?
I can tell you one thing for free. Because of the way the world has come to glorify violence, that's why people think that war is inevitable. I think if we persistently and consistently throw out peace as the only alternative, you know, let's take a step back and look at Syria. 4 years ago, Kofi Annan had a plan for peace. 4 years ago, the global leaders who are warmongers decided only a military solution would help us. 4 years later, we have a global catastrophe. I think 4 years ago, if they had taken on that peace plan that Annan put on the table, let's resolve this through dialogue, let's talk about this, let's beat all odds and spend hours sitting down instead of just picking up guns, because gun is the easiest way and a cowardly way of solving problems.
You mentioned that it's usually the men in power who conduct these wars. I'm assuming you would say that women have a particular role, a special role to play in preventing war.
Oh, definitely. The way I talk about it when I go to places of conflict is that in communities where you have a lot of the recruitment taking place, the women are the ones who know every young person. And so the metaphor I would want to use is her house. If it is dark, she can walk in and touch anything. And if you decide to fix her house and leave her out of it, you're leaving a very vital component of that fixing out of it. The woman knows of all of the fighters who you can talk to on which way and bring them back to a point of understanding. You keep them out of the room. You keep the conscience of those men out of the room. You keep the history of their lives out of the room. You keep the interaction in the community out of the room. And I think it's important for people to understand that, that that process of bringing the country back to stability needs the involvement, intervention of every member of the population. If you're leaving 50% of the population out of the process, it's like trying to see a whole picture with one eye cover.
You see what you're advocating here as being realistic. I mean, this is not just pie-in-the-sky idealism. I mean, it's sort of like, oh, if only we could do this. I mean, you think this works.
I think so. I believe it in my guts. And the reason why I'm saying it is, please help me understand. A few years ago, we're getting rid of Saddam Hussein. Today, we have ISIS. A few years ago, we got rid of Gaddafi. What we see in Libya is a total mess. A few years ago, Syria started with just protests, and then one armed group got in, another armed group got in. What we see now is another mess. Yemen and all of the bombings that have been taking place by the different high-power countries. If violence could end anything, our world would be a peaceful place. What we've seen in this short period from 9/11 till today is a world that is even more dangerous. You want to go to concerts, you think twice. More than ever before in the history of the world, everyone lives with a deep sense of fear. Today in Belgium, the entire country is locked down. Everyone is inside. If violence could solve any problem, why don't we have global peace?
That is a very good question. Wow. You are so inspiring. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Lima Bowie talking with Steve Paulson. Lima won the 2011 Nobel Peace Prize for her role in ending the brutal civil war in Liberia. She's a single mother of six and executive director of the Bowie Foundation.